Welcome to the Stats Modeling the World Instructors Podcasts. 10 points in under 10 minutes. We hope you find them helpful.
Hi, Dave Bach here to talk about Chapter 17. In Chapter 17, we examine two probability models based on Bernoulli trials, the geometric and the binomial. We ask students to check assumptions and conditions before using either of these models. And we also see what conditions allow the use of a normal model to estimate a binomial probability. Here are 10 important points to keep in mind. 1. Talk about Bernoulli trials first. Get students to recognize what characterizes Bernoulli trials. Two outcomes, fixed probability of success, independence from trial to trial. They should see that these situations are common. Coins, dice, foul shots in basketball, guessing at true-false or multiple-choice questions, even sampling voter opinion, all seem to have the right characteristics or at least close enough to make the models useful. 2. Students can find it difficult to distinguish between situations that are geometric and those that are binomial. Some of the confusion stems from the fact that both involve Bernoulli trials. The difference lies in the definition of the random variable. What are we counting as we conduct our Bernoulli trials? The geometric model applies to waiting time situations, that is, counting the number of trials it takes to achieve our first success. If instead we want to count the number of successes we see in a given number of trials, then we want a binomial model. 3. What's the probability that the first red M&M we get from our bag is the third candy we draw? Notice that the skills students need to answer this question come from the very first day of probability, back in Chapter 14. The only thing new here is formally naming the model that describes such waiting time probabilities, geometric. 4. Note that we actually draw M&Ms without replacement from a finite, albeit huge, population. So the independence condition is violated. The probability that the next one is red depends on how many red ones we have removed from the pool so far. But the small number of candies we eat is such a tiny subset of the vast number of M&Ms in the world that it doesn't really matter much. And that's the essence of the 10% condition. 5. The big issue in this chapter is the binomial model. It will lead us directly to the sampling model for sample proportions in Chapter 18, the basis for inference about proportions. We want students to be able to recognize circumstances that call for a binomial model and to be able to find the appropriate probabilities. But even more important are the assumptions and conditions that permit use of the model. And for large samples, the normal approximation, as they will show up repeatedly through the rest of this course. 6. There's no need to delve deeply into factorials, permutations, and combinations. It's enough that students understand that they need to know how many different ways they can get, say, 3 successes in 5 trials. Let them make a list to see that there are 10. Explain that mathematicians call such counts combinations, and show the notation. If they can write out the expressions for probabilities and evaluate them on the calculator, that's enough. This is not a formal probability course. What's important is recognizing when and how to apply the binomial model. 7. The idea that the mean of a binomial is NP is intuitive. Just ask the class how many 5-choice multiple-choice questions they'd expect to be able to get right if they guessed blindly on 20 questions. The standard deviation, though, of the binomial model is not obvious. The derivation is convincing, not very difficult, and it uses the last chapter's important revelation that we can add the variances of independent random variables. 8. Note again the distinction we draw between assumptions and conditions. Assumptions are theoretical mathematical requirements. Conditions are practical guidelines that confirm or sometimes override those assumptions. Sometimes there's no condition to test. For example, the question of whether the trials are independent when we toss a coin is left to us to think about. We can't think of any reason why not, so we simply assume that they are. The independence assumption is violated, though, whenever we sample without replacement. If we've drawn randomly, this clearly false assumption can be overridden by the 10% condition. We can confirm the large sample assumption with the success-failure condition that NP and NQ are greater than 10. 9. While it is technically true that some errors in the normal approximation to the binomial model come from the fact that the normal is continuous and the binomial discrete, these are generally negligible. Nothing we do later in this course will require a level of accuracy that makes the use of the continuity correction worth the time and effort needed to teach it, so you can avoid this source of confusion. 10. We now have a great opportunity to foreshadow the reasoning behind hypothesis testing, informally, of course. Suppose someone hands us a coin they assert to be biased in favor of heads. We plan to toss it 100 times to see what happens. We'll find nothing strange about getting 53 heads, and we'll certainly suspect something was up if we got 88 heads. But what about 67? How many heads would it take to convince us that the coin probably isn't fair? Well, the mean is 50 heads, with standard deviation 5. So 60 to 65 heads would be 2 to 3 standard deviations above the mean. Because the conditions check out for using a normal model, we'd be pretty sure such results were unusual.
Thank you very much. This concludes our discussion. We hope you find it helpful.